welcome to the Off the Charts Football Podcast. I'm Mark Simon, joined by SIS VP of Football Matt Minasharian and lead football analyst Alex Figerman. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, are we talking brackets today or what?
No, we're talking draft, as we have the last couple of episodes here. And we're going to talk about it from a statistical perspective today rather than from a scouting perspective. That's why Alex is here. He works in our R&D group, as does Matt. Let's start with some overview. We can actually do some analysis of our scouting first, so we're not completely done with scouting. How do our scouting grades, the ones that we talked about the last 2 weeks, how do they match up with how players turn out to be?
Yeah, this is something that I've wanted to do for a little while, but we really haven't had the opportunity because we don't have enough players who have made it into the NFL to evaluate yet. So now we have a few years of grades to evaluate. So I wanted to do a review of how well the scouting grades have lined up with both playing time and performance at the NFL level. In terms of making an impact in your first 2 years, which our scouting reports are based on, it's what you're going to be 2 years into the NFL. Being graded at that like 6.7, 6.8 level, the sort of solid starter grade, is really a clear line of demarcation in terms of both playing time and performance. And just to sort of refresh people, there's the 6.7 to 6.9 range is what we call like solid starters. 6.5 to 6.6 is more like projected low-end starters. And then that range of 6.2 to 6.4, Matt can give a little more detail on this, but it's often like solid backups or starters who play sort of particular kinds of roles.
The grading scale is completely based on the Patriots Way grading scale, really making sure that you're looking at things in terms of what are you going to be on the NFL level, not an arbitrary, I think he's a second round pick, I think he's a sixth round pick. So it's different for different positions because each of the positions are valued differently. A lot of defensive line positions, more versatility is going to be valued amongst those kind of role-playing starters. Whereas for an offensive lineman, we're looking at, again, are you a starting level player? Are you a backup level player? And then how many positions can you actually fill? A tackle is going to be more valuable than a guard, unless the guard's a much better player than the tackle.
Over the last three drafts, players who have been graded as that low-end starter grade, so that's the 6.5, 6.6 range, they play at least 500 snaps per season in their first 2 years, 21% of the time. And the players with the solid starter projection, that sort of tier above that, have done so 55% of the time. So more than twice of the guys who are that low-end starter, those solid starter grades really do result in more playing time. On the flip side of that, if you're graded as a solid starter, that's also suggests that you have a much lower chance of being a bust, whether that's from a playing time perspective or from a performance perspective. So those guys who have a solid starter grade have recorded a total points below zero, so that's sort of like below replacement level, in their first 2 years, half as often as the low-end starter group. And getting that 6.7 grade has a similar result in terms of your chances of recording fewer than 100 snaps per season. So both in terms of performance on a per-play basis and also your ability to get on the field, that solid starter grade is really the key thing there. If we also look at the line between the sort of low-end starter and the high-end backup or situational player, we see similar leaps in the success of the pick. So these are things that are obviously intuitive. We would expect these things to be the case, but it's good to have some data behind the sort of intuition about how our grades should work out.
So Alex, that's super interesting. This is something we've been wanting to do since we started the whole scouting department here at SIS, getting into a real analysis of this. Just to be clear, this is going to be coming out in an article next week that is going to be part of the launch of the new NFL draft site that we're going to have that's replacing the Football Rookie Handbook. So for everybody that knows the Football Rookie Handbook, it's no surprise. If you don't know, in the last 3 years, this has been in book form. This year, we're moving it to a brand new website with our, you know, awesome engineering and product design talent that we brought on board at SIS. And this is going to be one of the articles that's going to accompany that sort of draft guide content. And I can't wait to read the whole thing.
Alex, getting back to specifics of players here and the way that things shake out after they get picked, how do we do on quarterbacks?
We do okay on quarterbacks. The nice thing is, there's sort of an interesting phenomenon with recent quarterbacks where the guys who are below that like 6.5 grade, so the guys who we tab as backups, have basically almost all not really played meaningful snaps. So we look pretty good just because a lot of those guys have not really even gotten on the field. And so just in general, if you're looking at sort of like a graph of the relationship between the grade and both your playing time and your performance, there really is a jump there once you get above that sort of low-end starter grade. And so we have a pretty high correlation, therefore, between our grade going into, you know, coming into the draft and your snap share over the first 2 years of your career. Performance is a little bit noisier. That's true just in general. Total Points does a very good job of evaluating players, but it is still, you know, up to the vagaries of your teammates and EPA type stuff. So the correlation isn't quite as high, but relative to the other positions, quarterback does do pretty okay.
So thinking about that with my scouting hat on, I can tell you that, you know, when you're with a team, a big part of the hard part of scouting and evaluating scouts and understanding who's a good scout and who's not a good scout is you can only really evaluate the players that you graded that made it onto your team, because you're always grading them for how they're going to fit onto your team. And that's the only place that you end up seeing the sample size of how their career turns out, right? We don't ever get to find out what happens in the 31 other potential teams that drafted him. So there's always like a really weird thing going on between like whenever you look at the success or failure of a player on the NFL, it's kind of obvious to say, but where they end up is going to make a huge difference. But when you evaluate the players and you're trying to understand how accurate the evaluations are, that plays a big sort of role in understanding all of this. It's like, well, the players that we thought were good, we're going to get snaps. So what does that actually have to do with anything?
Yeah, this is a great point specifically as it relates to quarterback versus other positions. Only one quarterback's getting on the field for every team at a time. So, you know, our evaluation of Jordan Love has been irrelevant to, you know, like it doesn't matter how good he is or how good we expected him to be. But from an evaluation perspective, he is a data point in that data set, even Trey Lance to a lesser extent. So absolutely, you know, team situation is a huge impact on quarterbacks. And even if you think about guys like Mac Jones, who everybody said, you know, he landed in a great spot. He ended up on a quality team that allowed him to sort of ease himself in, and they had a good defense and all that kind of stuff. Like even those factors also contribute. And so it's definitely hard for us to evaluate when we have these sort of team context factors, independent of the sort of the quality of your teammates, but also just, are you even going to be get on the field because there's a Hall of Famer in front of you?
So segueing from scouting to actual players and their stats, a very broad question. How should we go about analyzing the stats of college players trying to project what they're going to be like in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, this is the sort of key question. I think it's pretty tough because of what we were just talking about of the context, not only, you know, at both levels, right? So the conference level and quality of competition context that exists at the college level, but also that because there are different schemes and you're asked to do different things, and the quality of your teammates and your opponents differs, you want to try and isolate as much as possible the factors that are relatively consistent from college to the NFL. So if we're looking at things like broken and missed tackle rates for running backs that are pretty stable from one level to the next, or accuracy on particular kinds of throws as a quarterback, and focusing more on things like accuracy as opposed to completion percentage, because you're less worried about the quality of the receivers you're throwing to and those sort of things. So doing as much as we can to isolate the factors that are under the control of the individual player and are less variable based on all the various other things that can contribute noise there.
And the other thing just to think about is that performance, you know, when you're projecting a player's performance, the only thing that goes into that isn't just the evaluation. Like certainly there are things you can do as you evaluate to try to make sure that you're creating more predictive metrics to understand things into the future. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of stuff that's going to happen to each of these players. This is kind of similar to my last point, from the time that they finish their college playing career and whatever they were at that time to whatever they become on the NFL level, right? These are still humans that develop.
Young humans, yeah. Everyone's going to, for the rest of eternity, we're going to talk about guys like Josh Allen, who just develop accuracy and become the kind of player that justifies the pick that he was taken at. But when he was out of college, he was pretty raw. And lots of players who were taken like that go the other direction. And so the ability, I suppose, if we could identify the sort of grit factors and these sort of soft skills that turn a guy who has potential into a guy who has actualized that potential, that would be very valuable, but it's very difficult to ascertain that.
Right. Or difficult to ascertain that like Brian Daboll is going to have great success with him after his illustrious coaching career to that point involved the development of not so many quarterbacks. I actually think of this like with Josh Allen and that trade, I'm very interested to look as we get more and more data and can look at things sort of longitudinally at which traits are stable, which traits, this is what you are, and this is what it's going to be. And maybe there's an aging curve that we can attach to it that we feel pretty good about. And then which traits you can actually improve upon. Like maybe Josh Allen's a little bit like Jason Kidd. I remember when I thought like a shooter was a shooter in the NBA, Jason Kidd was a bad shooter for most of his career. He's one of my favorite players growing up. So I feel okay slandering him. And then, but obviously he became, you know, one of the best. He became, you know, like one of the leaders in total three-pointers made in his career by the end of his career. And obviously now he's like nothing compared to what we see from three-point shooters in the NBA. But that's clearly a very learnable skill for NBA players. Maybe accuracy is more learnable than it was in the past.
We'll talk about the accuracy thing in a little bit. But yeah, I do think that there's definitely a longitudinal thing that we should be looking at here when we have a little bit more data for exactly that kind of reason.
So staying with quarterbacks for a second, what can we glean about this group of college quarterbacks from their numbers? I imagine with someone like Malik Willis at Liberty, it's a little harder to translate those to the pros than with someone like Kenny Pickett, Desmond Ridder, or Sam Howell.
Willis is difficult. I mean, the quality of competition thing for him is absolutely a factor. But even for guys who are in these like big programs, they're traditional pocket passers, like everything about them is relatively sort of the NFL prototype of quarterback. You think of guys like Justin Herbert or even Josh Allen, and they have pretty meaningfully fluctuated in terms of things like accuracy, both within college and at the pro level. To sort of evaluate this, we can use something that John Shirley, formerly of SIS, now a researcher for Elias, who wrote about prospects' performance in various accuracy measures that we have, all the way up to what he called on-target percentage plus minus. So that's comparing your on-target percentage of your throws to what we'd expect based on things like the type of throw, where it was thrown, the route that you're throwing, the weather, all sorts of things. And so Kenny Pickett, for example, has rated as above average each of the last 3 years by that measure. So if we're talking about guys who sort of show consistent accuracy and that this is a trait, Kenny Pickett seems to present that. As a contrast, Desmond Ridder has been below average each of the last 3 years. So if we want to believe that this is something that is sort of stable about a player, I believe in Kenny Pickett's accuracy more than I believe in Desmond Ridder's accuracy. And for what it's worth, Sam Howell was elite in 2020 from this perspective, and he had a down year this year, but was still above average by this metric. So just to give a sense for those top guys. And to put this in context, if we look at accuracy of in college of players who have had some amount of playing time in the NFL, because obviously we can't evaluate your accuracy if you don't play. Of the 22 college player seasons by guys like Joe Burrow, Trevor Lawrence, Davis Mills, Drew Locke, Dwayne Haskins, Gardner Minshew, all these guys who have been drafted the last few years who have gotten a decent amount of playing time, we have 22 player seasons. Only three of them were below average and on target plus minus. You know, if you want to play at the NFL level, even if you're playing, you know, poorly, if you want to get the shot to play at the NFL level, you have to be accurate.
Well, that's definitely been true. You know, that's what I learned as a scout coming up is that you need that, and that needs to be one of those traits. It's kind of interesting when you think about it. Like, I still wouldn't want a below average accuracy quarterback, but if they had like every other tool like Josh Allen had, and you told me like that was a trainable skill, maybe there are some players that should have gotten shots that didn't because they were like, ah, no, this is another Jamarcus Russell. Like, we can't have him. I don't know.
Yeah. I do think that there's definitely, you know, we talk about this in various contexts of the sort of sampling bias effect of guys only get to a certain point if they're a certain level of accurate. And that's true at every level that you can cut players off at. So yeah, you need to be accurate, but you don't necessarily need to be accurate coming out of college if we can, you know, find a way to improve that. And then, you know, talking about the sort of vagaries of evaluating college players, like one of the best seasons we've had in terms of on target plus minus was Jalen Hurts. And he has not been particularly accurate at the NFL level. So, you know, there are definitely counterexamples in both directions.
So what should we make of Sam Howell? Because I remember last year at this time reading things that said, oh, this guy could be like a top five pick the next season. And you just said, he's got one really good and one really bad. What are we supposed to make of that?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, even Justin Herbert, to some extent, had this phenomenon where he was really like a super elite prospect the year before he came out, and he had kind of a down year, you know, not quite as dramatic in terms of perception as Howell. But I think that for these quarterbacks, and you know, if you have the examples of like Mark Sanchez and Mitchell Trubisky of guys who have lower sample size, like just getting more years of information on a guy and reps and the ability to get a sense for what a guy can do well and what guy can't do well, I think has a lot of value. So even just showing that he can perform it at that high of a level for Howell, I think for me personally means more than the potential fluctuations from year over year. But I totally understand that sort of taking a step back and saying like, hey, we thought he was up here and now, you know, we have a decent body of evidence to suggest that we actually should temper that quite a bit.
Yeah, Mark, I think two really big things happened from a narrative standpoint. One, Sam Howell had a bad year. He lost a lot of weapons to his team, to the NFL, and he did not play well in the wake of that, especially obviously those two stud running backs who are Michael Carter and Javonte Williams, who had great seasons on the NFL level, matching their college production in a lot of ways. So that's one thing. The other thing is this guy's been compared to Baker Mayfield a lot, and this was Baker Mayfield's worst season. And it's kind of a low point in the Baker Mayfield narrative. Man, when we were out at the Senior Bowl, and you start to see Howell out there in person and the way he kind of moves on the hoof and things, there's a lot of kind of Baker light stuff there about him. And if you're asking NFL evaluators today if they're interested in Baker Mayfield light, they're not. So that's, I think, a big part of why that narrative changed. Before we move on, I did want to go back to a point that, staying on the Senior Bowl, Alex brought up when it came to Kenny Pickett and how he compared to Desmond Ridder, Kenny Pickett being a guy who's been above average and on target, above expectation, and Ridder being a guy who's below average. I would tell you anecdotally, that matches what you saw that week. What you saw there that week was a consistency in his motion and his release from Kenny Pickett that looked translatable, even though he's got tiny hands. And Desmond Ridder, you saw a ball that I thought came out with some inconsistency. Now, that's low sample size, whereas that stat has all of the sample size. But I get the benefit of being in person and getting all those things that my human mind can process that the stat is limited to only the ones and zeros. Interesting that they match. I always love it when they match. That's always a reassuring feeling.
Continuing with quarterbacks, what would be misleading to look at for a quarterback?
We're not immune to this by any stretch. You know, we're certainly not perfect in the way that we evaluate players, but ideally you want to avoid over-relying on metrics that are disproportionately affected by all the factors that we talked about earlier: quality of your teammates, quality of your opponents, quality of the offensive scheme. I don't want to be talking too much about things like passer rating or even things like EPA per dropback, that sort of thing, because they are at their core sort of team metrics. They are assigned to the quarterback, but they involve sort of everybody involved. And, you know, thinking about the Oklahoma and Alabama quarterbacks of the last few years, they can't all be as elite as the stats that they present. And so, you know, we're going for things that account for the difficulty of the situation, talking about things like on target plus minus. And even those aren't covering all the relevant factors, but we do want to be able to account as much as possible for the quality of the players around you, both your teammates and your opponents.
Yeah, the broader answer is it's misleading to look at any one number and think that can describe a quarterback in an effective way, especially when we're just talking about not like a scouting type perspective evaluation, but total points is built to be descriptive, right? We're describing how well they performed in their college season, which is a different thing than projecting out how they perform. I think when you really want to get to the best way to look at a quarterback, yeah, like completion percentage is a terrible way to evaluate a quarterback. And like that goes back to like any one number is really the wrong way. But if you can boil down the individual skills and start to understand the numbers that actually correspond with the different skills that matter for quarterback play in the NFL, then I think you're on the right track.
Yeah, and I think that sort of relates to what I guess I was talking about earlier of if you can isolate the particular elements of quarterback play that are most translatable to the NFL level, the kinds of throws, the kinds of situations that both are consistent between college and the NFL and also are things that can be more trait-based, things that we can really trust about our evaluation of a player. Focusing on those things and presenting several stats about those things is going to give you a better shot of evaluating well.
So we've kind of been alluding to this throughout this show and the previous two shows that we've done. Our NFL Draft website is coming soon. It'll feature more than 300 scouting reports, statistical evaluations of every player. We've got lots of articles, things that we've talked about on this particular episode, things that we talked about on the last couple of episodes. It's going to be awesome. Stay tuned. Check sportsinfosolutions.com for more updates. Also, a couple of other podcasts that you might want to check out. Playing in Space, our NBA-focused podcast, hosted by SIS basketball strategy analyst Henry Ward. The show covers the association through conversations on league-wide trends through a philosophical lens driven by insights derived from SIS's NBA data. From discussions of players and team performance to basketball decision-making theory, Playing in Space has you covered. And also check out the SIS Baseball podcast, where we interview current players and coaches about what goes into defensive excellence. We also regularly talk with prominent media members about the latest baseball news. So check out our podcasts wherever you get them. Matt mentioned total points. Let's stay with that for a second. For those that aren't familiar or that need a refresher, can you just explain what it is and what it does?
Total points is our answer to a catch-all metric for football. So it's you know, similar to wins above replacement in baseball or any of those sorts of things. And we're taking all of our charting data, every player on every play, and we're using, you know, dozens of data points to evaluate each player based on what they did or did not do. And we're putting all of those things onto an expected points added currency, basically. So everything is, you know, this blown block was worth a third of a point negative, and this broken tackle was worth a quarter of a point positive. And all those different elements add up to being able to evaluate players on the same scale to a large extent. So I can compare the value that a running back brings to the value that an outside linebacker brings. And also at the college level specifically, we have an additional adjustment, which is for the quality of your opponent. Now, we're not going too deep into that and saying like, oh, Alabama is this good and Georgia is this good and worrying about that. But it's more of the broad strokes of if you're playing a lot of games against SEC opponents or if you're playing a lot of group of five schools, those differences will definitely show up. And that will also sort of move the needle between like 10% up or down, unless we're talking about playing FCS schools.
So who shows up in total points on the college ranks this year, guys that are draft prospects, maybe someone who might be looking better in that stat than he does in a scouting report?
So we're still working out all of our scouting reports. So I don't even know where he's going to end up from that perspective. But in looking at sort of our preliminary leaderboards, weak side linebacker Malcolm Rodriguez did it all in his final season at Oklahoma State. He was number one run defender at his position by total points among the draft prospects that we're looking at, allowed fewer than 10% of his tackle attempts to be broken or missed, making his tackles nearly like 40% further upfield than you'd expect based on where he was aligned and where the runs were going. We call that stat adjusted tackle depth plus. When he was in coverage, he allowed only 4 out of 20 targets in his direction to go for a positive EPA. And he even blitzed a little bit, blitzed about 1 in 7 snaps, and he pressured the quarterback a little over a quarter of the time when he did that. So the following is not meant to be a comp, but you know, if you look at guys like Micah Parsons, who made such an impact to the NFL level in his rookie year, it's that kind of across-the-board impact where you can rush the passer, you can drop back in coverage, you can play the run. That's going to end up, you know, giving you quite a bit in terms of production on these kind of stats.
So a couple of the top prospects in this year's draft are edge rushers. There's Aiden Hutchinson from Michigan, Kayvon Thibodeau from Oregon. We go from a linebacker to an edge rusher. What do we have to evaluate these guys and the rest of the edge rushing class?
Yeah, we have a good suite of pass rushing stats this year, but we'll start with total points because that's my favorite. So these guys had two of the most productive pass rush seasons in the last few, according to total points. Hutchinson had 35 pass rush points saved. That puts him in the top 20 over the last 4 seasons, you know, hundreds of players. Thibodeau was merely top 40. So some sarcasm there, obviously an awesome season. Very similar advanced stats. We have, you know, all of our stats that are going to be on this draft site are sort of broken down into basic, advanced, and deep dive. And all these deep dive stats, very similar. They're primarily rushing from a 2-point stance. They have virtually identical sack rates, very similar pressure rates. They both get pressure on the quarterback quickly, pretty frequently. Both have a pressure rate that is more than 5% more than what we'd expect based on things like game state and alignment. And both were also this year solid contributors against the run. They had a total points rating above 90, which is sort of like a Madden rating or a grade in school per play basis version of total points. On a per play basis against the run, both were very good this year. And it's sort of impressive how similar they are across the sort of suite of stats that we have.
Would we necessarily say that one was better than the other?
Based on the suite of stats that we're talking about, I think that Hutchinson had a more productive season. But what I will say is part of the reason that he had a higher total points number for that year is that he performed very well on money downs relative to Thibodeau. Thibodeau was more like middle of the pack in terms of his total points production on third and fourth downs, which when we use an expected points added based stat, third and fourth downs have a huge impact. So I do think that like the difference between them in terms of total points is actually not even as large as it looked there. So from a stats perspective, they're pretty close.
Yeah, there's also a huge snaps discrepancy between the two of them because Thibodeau missed some time. So I think that's part of it too, right? Total points is going to be cumulative. It's going to have to do with that. I think that matches, again, the eye test. Hutchinson probably a little bit more of a finished product right now, one of the most productive players in college football. But Thibodeau is somebody who I think the upside probably goes a little bit higher in terms of what the ceiling could be with him. They're both top prospects for a reason, whether it's the eye test or the numbers test.
So when we're going to talk about edge rushers, we're going to talk about pressure rate. It's one of the big stats that's always going to come up. How does something like their alignment factor in? I think you were just kind of alluding to this. And how does it all bundle up into total points? And then maybe we can get into some names to know in terms of rusher edge rushers.
Yeah. So one of our favorite stats for pass rushers in the last couple of years is what we call pressures above expectations. So that's taking into account where you were lined up at the start of the play, and also situational factors down in distance, you know, the number of other rushers that you're sending on the play, that sort of thing. And that gives you an expectation for how likely you were to get pressure based on the situation. And then we compare your actual pressure rate to what we would expect. So unsurprisingly, guys like Aaron Donald are going to do very well here because he's one of the leaders in pressure in the NFL, but he's playing from an interior alignment a lot of the time. And those guys typically don't get pressure very often. So
Aaron Donald was a huge guy. Micah Parsons was a leader amongst this year, but then also Jonathan Allen was a guy that I don't think as many people think about because he's aligned inside so frequently and it's harder to generate pressure from there. His name kind of jumps up the list, and that's what the best part about pressures above expectation is. It's the best tool that we have to predict pressure and therefore sack production in the future for players. This really isolating this really gets to the skill of the player.
Yeah. And within total points, we use a flavor of that and combine it with what I was talking about before, with the average EPA value of a non-sack pressure to put that impact into context. We also do things in terms of other evaluations of pressure. We also, you know, when there's a sack and one guy gets the sack and the other guy had a hurry before that sack happens, we're splitting responsibility for that sack between those players. So there are additional layers on top of this sort of basic pressures above expectation framework that sort of all come into the pass rush total points, the big soup or whatever you want to call it.
What about a player?
Yeah, so a big producer from a total points perspective this year was Sam Williams of Ole Miss. Contrasting with the top two guys in the draft, he's almost exclusively playing with his hand in the ground. But he really had some big time production playing in the SEC, had a top 10 in the nation in pressures, and really productive on those money downs. And as I mentioned before, total points does take into account the quality of your opponent. So if Ole Miss was one of the most sort of boosted defenses because of the quality of the offenses that they played this year.
So from edge rushers, let's go to the guys that protect the quarterbacks and statistical evaluation of linemen, which I do find pretty interesting. And I'm looking at last year's rookie handbook. We had 18 stats to evaluate each position, even the offensive line. What are the most important stats that we should know for an offensive lineman?
Well, I bet that a lot of those 18 stats were related to one particular thing that we do. This might be a bit strained of an analogy, but the offensive line is to the offense what blown block rate is to our evaluation of offensive line. Blown blocks are super impactful when they happen. We're talking about like a third of an expected point added each time. And we chart them so precisely, something that Matt can certainly attest to better than I could. They're really the centerpiece of our evaluation of offensive linemen in general, but also within total points. So, you know, we also account for performance of when they're blocking on run plays, runs in their direction. We give them credit for plays gaining more or fewer yards before contact than we'd expect, accounting for when the run was bounced or cut back, either towards them or away from them. So total points takes both rushing and passing into account. And if we're comparing the sort of top guys in the draft.
So how do guys like Evan Neal, Ike Mekwonu, Charles Cross, guys that are projected as elite picks, potentially even top pick, how do they fare in these stats?
Neal and Cross had outstanding years in terms of total points. They were basically neck and neck, Neal being more balanced between run and pass, Cross being much more successful as a pass blocker. Ekwonu is a smidge behind both of them in blown block rate, as well as just play volume and competition level in terms of the defensive lineman he's playing against. So his total points is going to lag behind a little bit.
So you said a smidge behind. What's the demarcation of like meaningful difference?
Yeah, this is a tough one. And I'm glad you pointed this out, because blown blocks are very important, but they are also relatively rare. On a per player basis, we're talking about just like a few times out of 100 snaps. So the difference between these players and blown block rate is like 1.3% versus 1.8%, which is, you know, in by any meaningful measure, a smidge.
Should we be thinking, just like, if I was looking at this and I see that 1.3%, I see that 1.8%, and I take what you just said, should that be a difference maker in terms of how you're going to rank a player?
What I would say to that is, if you talk to any offensive lineman in the NFL, they'll always complain that if they make one bad play in a game, then they had a bad game. Whereas a defensive lineman just needs to make one good play and they had a good game.
So it's be perfect.
Well, it is a bit the nature of offensive linemen, is your job is to kind of not F up, for lack of a better word. So I think that when you talk about those differences, okay, it's 0.5%, but that's over the course of 1,000 snaps in a season. That's a handful of extra sacks that you might give up. It's a handful of plays in the backfield. This is a meaningful difference. Now, yeah. And I mean, going beyond that, you know, there's also all the others that doesn't even begin to address anything beyond blown blocks that's addressed within total points. Like, was I run behind on this play? And was, you know, how many yards before the running back was contacted and things like that. So there's a lot of context being built in there. And just because the magnitude of difference doesn't look like a lot, as far as a descriptive stat, the difference is the difference.
I think that what Matt pointed out there is really relevant. What happens after a blown block? What happens after a blown block typically is the run play gets blown up for negative yardage, or the quarterback gets sacked or has to throw it away when otherwise he would have had a good play. And so these plays are very disruptive, even if they are rare.
And to also kind of go back the other way a little bit, the fact that there aren't very many of them by nature makes it something that is less predictive into the future, right? We don't have a lot of sample for this. So there is the prospect of volatility that you're going to have with it. So there are limitations to this, but it is very impactful.
It's sort of low sample. Like, it is the denominator is all blocking snaps, right? So you are being evaluated on every single play. But I think what really is the takeaway from what you just said is one blown block, one way or the other, has a relatively can, you know, meaningfully change the percentages, because the percentages are so low.
So with all of that, what's the next statistical frontier for us in terms of specifically what we, our company, can do?
So I will speak just sort of from a personal interest perspective. I think what I would really like to do, total points, for example, takes into account the quality of your opponent and understands that you're playing in a certain context and that your stats should understand that you were doing whatever you did in either a particularly easy circumstance or a particularly difficult circumstance. Ideally for me, almost all of our stats would operate something like that. And we would have some ability to translate, this guy had X yards after contact per reception, adjusted for the quality of the defense that he was playing against. And basically every stat, we would have some notion of how difficult was it for you to accomplish the things that you did accomplish.
For me, I would say that a lot of what I'm particularly interested in is figuring out which the specific traits from a scouting perspective, we can really start to hone in on, to really start to understand how the data applies in that sense, and doing more now that we have a few years of this stuff. Like, we've been kind of patiently waiting here, building up our scouting database, building up our player database, statistical database. I think we're finally reaching the point where we can start to tease some more out of it. So instead of using this as a tool where we say, this is how well this person performed in college and feeling pretty good about that, we can get to a point where we're saying, this is how this trait projects to him in the pros. And that to me is a more fun question to try to get to the bottom of.
Going back to the beginning of our conversation, the comparison of our scouting grades to performance at the NFL level, one of the things I started out thinking about, but didn't really have a great set of answers for, was exactly that. Taking our grades at a trait level, all of our, you know, positional factors and critical factors, and trying to create a stat that is analogous, see if those are predictive. Because I think, you know, to our points about we don't want one stat. We want several stats to be able to measure all the different elements of a player's performance. If we can create stats that map very cleanly to the factors that we're evaluating from a scouting perspective and evaluating against those, then maybe we do a better job.
Cool. This wraps up the Off the Charts podcast for this week. Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Justin Stein, our producer and editor. We appreciate you listening. I'm Mark Simon. We'll see you next week.